Welcome to Parkinson's Recovery. This is Robert Rogers. Today, I will be talking about the fourth of five steps that are essential for being able to see consistent and promising relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. For those of you who checked in for the first three sessions on the first three steps, what you are well aware about is I'm not actually talking about therapies. I'm not talking about eating the right or the wrong food. I'm not talking about exercise. I'm not talking about going to this medical doctor or that naturopath or this acupuncturist or this body worker. What I'm talking about is the most fundamental piece of all, the piece that's absolutely essential for you to be able to jumpstart your program of recovery so that you see relief from your symptoms. And the whole theme of these discussions is right thinking will lead to recovery. It's all about your thoughts. Thoughts are, as it turns out, what will make a huge difference. Let me explain what I mean. Perhaps you see a good friend you haven't seen for 5 years, and you were dear friends 5 years ago. You embrace. Your friend says to you, "How are you? How are you?" And you say, "Oh, I have Parkinson's disease." Feel in now to that energy. To me, that feels depressing. It has a very low frequency. It's certainly not an uplifting statement. It may be factual from the perspective of a medical doctor, but the fact is that the energetic statement is full of dark energy. Now, let's say the very same circumstance comes down, and your friend that you haven't seen for 5 years says, "Hi, how are you?" And what you say to your friend is, "Oh, I've got some symptoms here and there, but I am on the road to recovery." Check in with that energy. That energy is the energy that is replete with hope, with an energetic, positive attitude that will ultimately have the energy behind it, which is necessary for recovery. What is then the fourth step? The fourth step is a very simple word. That word is faith. Those who have faith that recovery will happen for them will see that that is, in fact, what will happen. In much of my writing, I talk about hope. I say to people, here is a place where you can find hope. And that is true. We document the stories of people who are feeling better and for those who are actually symptom-free today. And I use the word hope frequently and liberally. The truth is, however, as I've been working on this discussion today, hope is a qualified term. When I use the word hope, what tends to happen is we think, okay, hey, that's pretty great. It means it might happen or it might not. I don't know, but I'm hopeful there's a chance. And of course, behind that, what you might be saying is the chance is maybe only 5%, but what does it matter? At least I have hope. So it turns out hope's not the word to use if you are determined to see a relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's. The word is faith. Faith is what will make a huge and a compelling difference with regard to your ability to recover. When have you had faith in your life? And the answer is, regardless of whether or not you hold deep religious convictions or not, you have had faith throughout your entire life. When you drive and come to a red light, do you not stop? Do you not count on when the light turns green that you can go? you have faith that other people at that very same stoplight will obey the rules of the stoplight. You do, I do, everybody has faith that that system will work, and it does work. When you obtain a prescription from a pharmacist, from medication that has been prescribed by your doctor, do you doubt that that medicine has integrity, that that medicine is, in fact, what you ordered and paid for? Are you a person who takes that medication and submits it to a chemical analysis to ensure that that is, in fact, what you bought? Well, maybe so, but I'm here to tell you I've certainly never done that, and I don't know of anybody who has. When we go to get a prescription from a pharmacist, we have faith that that pharmacist, who is well-trained to do the work that they do, will provide to us the medication that we have ordered from them. We have faith that it will be just so. Do you use an accountant to do your taxes? I've recently done that because the taxes got a bit complicated. Do you, if you use an accountant, do you have a second accountant that checks on the work of the first accountant? Well, maybe some of you do, but I suspect most people don't. You have one accountant, the accountant does the work, you signed it off, and the work is done. You have faith that that accountant knows what they are doing. I do, everybody does. So we have had evidence of having faith in many, 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 many decisions throughout our lives, day in and day out. What does faith do to you? Faith means that you believe it will happen. You believe that it is true. Faith produces confidence. Faith generates action. When we have faith, we're willing to do something about it. Faith is a surge of power and energy that we can feel throughout every tissue of our body. Faith encourages us to focus. Faith enhances our creative energies and juices so that we are willing to find other ways of making something happen for ourselves. Faith makes it possible for us to have the dedication to look for solutions in the oddest places. Think about it. When you have faith that something's going to happen, don't you begin to notice what happens that seems to be a bit unusual? For example, you make a trip on a plane and you sit next to somebody, and that somebody begins to talk about a topic that, as it turns out, you're desperately interested in. Don't you, if you have faith, don't you think, I wonder why that person is sitting next to me? Okay, it might be entirely random, but the fact is that your interest is piqued in sitting next to that stranger. So things begin to happen to us in our life, and then we're willing to ask ourselves the curious question, I wonder why that just happened to me. Is that a signal? Is that a sign that I need to pay attention to? Faith means that you will find a way to make it happen. You will act without any hesitation whatsoever. So many people wonder, well, okay, how do I really have faith? After all, there are so many naysayers out there. There are so many doubters. There's so much information that it's just not possible for me to begin to feel better from the symptoms of Parkinson's. How in the world am I supposed to have faith in something that even the most well-trained and skilled people tell me is not true? I believe one of the ways that you can have faith is simply to act. That's what you do. You say, all right, I'm going to make it so. I have faith that it is true. And using that thought process, you then take action. What action do you take? Do you know what I really think? I honestly think it actually doesn't matter what action you take. What matters is you begin to take action. You begin to move. Maybe what you decide to do is not working. Okay, you take more action. Action gives the energy to take another step. One step leads to two, to three, to four, to five. Action is what can make a huge and a profound difference. I have a letter and a question that I have received that speaks to the topic of faith. I want to read this. I have been thinking about this particular correspondence now for a week and want to read you what this particular individual says. Do you have any suggestions on how to get an 80-year-old man to recover from Parkinson's with extreme rigidity and dementia, who is virtually at the non-responsive level? He can barely speak and has a very difficult time swallowing and is now developing aspiration pneumonia. Is there anything that could provide immediate relief? Now, the first answer is yes, there's a lot that could be done that would provide immediate relief. And I have a confession to make. I began to make a list of what might be possible steps for this person to take to provide some immediate relief. But the truth is that the underlying issue with this particular individual turns on, do they really want to heal? Do they really want to recover? Do they have faith that it can happen? What's really underneath this person's behavior? What I read into this statement is severe and compelling depression. It feels to me like there is almost an underlying wish to check out. That comes for all of us in our lives. We live, we do, we love, we have joy, we have times that aren't so good, and then we get to a point where we say, I'm done. This really is all I need to do in this life. And literally people check out. They stop taking care of themselves. Health is an active process. It is what we all must do in order to maintain wellness. And I don't mean just people with the symptoms of Parkinson's. This is true of everybody. It sounds like this particular individual is not taking any steps to take care of their own health. Has he given up all faith? Does this particular individual have no reason to stay here on the earth any longer? So the question I have directly for this individual is, what do you have left to do here on this earth? What do you have to do that is left on this earth? Now, the question wasn't written by this particular individual. It sounds like it was written by a loved one, somebody who deeply cares about this person and is more than likely a very close relative. So this puts this person into a particularly challenging spot. They want their loved one to basically recover and feel better. It's miserable as a caretaker to watch one that you love go downhill slowly. But the truth of the matter is, the best thing we can do for a person who's made a decision to basically check out of living in a physical body is to honor their choice. Who are we to make a judgment one way or another about how they decide to live their lives? There's a second thing I want to recommend to the person who wrote this very profound statement, and that's the following. Not only, I think, would it be powerful for you to simply honor whatever choice this person has made in their lives, but second, the one powerful thing you can do is to begin, if you're not already, taking good care of yourself. In other words, do what it is that you're hoping your loved one will do. And that, of course, means that you have faith that whatever symptoms you might have, though they might not be Parkinson's, can be addressed through your own healing response. In other words, you take positive action. You have faith that, yes, whatever ailments you might have can be addressed one way or another. And by having faith yourself, that creates an incredibly positive energy and an effect on the person that you're so desperately concerned about. The last part of the statement is, he, that is the 80-year-old man, is losing interest in eating and always wants to sleep, can barely keep his eyes open. So there it is. It may be that this person has come to the end of their ropes. They have no more faith that they will be able to feel better. Their thoughts are replete with negative energy. And they've made their decision to check out. So the real issue is for you, how do you accept this and how do you actually handle this? And again, my suggestion would be honor their decision, support their decision, simply be present with them, love them for all that they have been and all that they will become, and let it unfold as it might. I can assure you, when you ask the question, is there something that can be done? The answer unequivocally is, yeah, there's a lot that can be done to jumpstart a person who is in this particular place. The underlying issue is clearly the issue of depression. And so the other question turns on, well, what really is the underlying dimension of depression for this person and what's causing it? I want to say something very personal about an individual's choice to no longer be here on this earth. My wife, Nanette, who I dearly and desperately was in love with, had a genetic condition called Marfan's condition, and we were both always fearful that a time would come when her aorta would dissect, which is one of the complications of Marfan's. And one Sunday morning, we left our house and began walking down to church, which was only two or three blocks away. And we had a continual discussion, she and I, about my moving to another university. And she looked at me and she said, I think it's time to move on. And I was surprised. I said, but Nanette, you're so happy here. You have so many wonderful things that you're doing. And she looked and she said, No, I'm my work is done. I'm ready to move on. And I was totally shocked. I was totally surprised because I thought we'd made a decision, she and I, to hang around in Lexington for longer. We walked down to the church, which is only several blocks, and about 5 minutes later, she was struck with a dissecting aorta and was taken to the emergency room. They performed surgery attempting to repair the dissection, but Nanette died 3 days later. It has taken me years to really recover from that. But I realized in retrospect that that was her decision, that she was done and she was ready to move on. Our children were adults. And she really acknowledged that her work was done and she was ready to move on. I think we all make those decisions at some point in our lives. And for those of us who are desperately in love with people who make those decisions, what we can do is simply acknowledge and honor whatever decisions our loved ones have made for themselves. That's, as I see it, the best thing that we can do. I want to do a meditation now, and after I finish the meditation, I would like to answer some more questions that have been asked. And the meditation is designed and configured to be able to sort your thinking in a positive way and to bolster you up with the faith that is required to be able to find that you can get consistent and nourishing relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. Now, what I want to then invite you to do over the next 15 minutes is to go into a little meditative state. So no matter where you are, let me simply say, get relaxed. You may have been particularly attentive as I've been giving some discussion here to the content. But now it's a time for you to go into a space of your own. And so get comfortable wherever you might be, and make sure that your feet are on the floor, and take a breath in and a breath out so that you can just feel all of the tension that might be residing inside the trunk of your body to dissipate. And noticing when the breath leaves your body, paying attention to what it feels like when the air leaves your body. Focusing your thoughts now only on your body and on your breath as you listen to my voice. Taking another breath in, letting that air out, and relaxing each and every tense muscle and tissue in your body. Making a quick scan to check your feet, your thighs, your trunk, your buttocks, your back. And as you notice any tension there, without any big deal, just ask your body, let's relax now. There's no reason to be uptight. I'm in a safe place. I'm doing something that's going to be useful for me. So let's let it go for now. Allowing all the tension throughout your entire body, in your shoulders, in your arms, in your neck, around your eyes, behind your eyes, in your ears, all the way up to the tippy top of your head. Just doing a quick scan, no big deal. And if you notice a little tension, just let it go. Taking another breath in and another breath out. Treasuring what it means to be alive and treasuring the joy of being able to have a breath in and out from your body. Today, there is a very special event that you are invited to. This event is a thought auction. You may have never attended a thought auction before, so this promises to be a very, very special event indeed. To prepare for this event, I first invite you to bring whatever money you would like to bring, because the thoughts will cost something. So, wherever you tend to house money, if it's in credit cards or in cash or stuffed underneath the mattress, wherever the money is, stuff it now into your pockets. However much you want to bring to purchase these thoughts, however much you think it might be worth to you today, stuff it in your pockets, obviously in your imagination. Ask yourself how much money you really want to bring to the auction. How much is it worth to you? Now, in your imagination, open up the door and enter into either your car or the trolley or the subway or however you get to places. Get into that mode of transportation and begin to travel now to the site of the thought auction. It only takes you a few seconds to get there because we are in magic time. And as you arrive to this huge, gorgeous auction hall and enter the front door, there are hundreds and hundreds of people of all shapes and colors and nationalities. that are furiously anxious about being able to purchase the thoughts that they have come to this auction to purchase. And on the walls are gold vases and chandeliers that are made of such gorgeous glass that you have never seen the beauty of what it looks like when the sun shines through those crystals. And the chairs in this thought auction, oh my, are they comfortable. Go ahead and sit in a chair, for there are still a few that are available for you. Find a good seat so you can hear and see the auctioneer. And as you sit down into this seat, notice it's like a massage. It vibrates. I mean, talking about being relaxed, this is the coolest place to be of all. The sound of the auditorium begins to settle a bit now, a little bit quieter, as the auctioneer pounces to the very front of the room, in front of an oh-so-awesome golden podium. And what an impressive hammer this particular auctioneer has for ending the bidding on the thoughts. "Hear, hear," the auctioneer says, "it is time to begin the bidding, as everyone, all persons of all colors and nationalities, sit in their seats, as each and every seat is now filled with a human who is there to purchase the thoughts that are so dear to them." The auctioneer now starts. "I am now ready," says the auctioneer, to offer for purchase the first thought. The first thought up for purchase is, "I can't do it by myself." And lo and behold, the person next to you says 1,000, and the person to your right says 5,000. People in the back, 10, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. Finally, the auctioneer says, "Do I hear more?" "No more. Sold for $40,000. You might have wanted that, but that, I'm sorry. Thought is already taken. Next thought for auction. "I'll never get better." Furiously, somebody from the very rear of the auditorium, 50,000. The person in front of them, 60,000. 70, 100,000, 150, 200,000, 250,000. Finally, the auctioneer says, "Do I hear more than 250? "No, sold. Sorry, but I don't know how much money you brought to this auction, but that's not for sale." The third thought up for auction. "I don't deserve it." Somebody starts with 500,000. No other bidders. "Do you want to buy that one? I don't deserve it. It's up for sale. 501,000, you can have it." The auctioneer says, "Nope, that's it. That's sold. So I'm sorry, that one is not going to be one you can buy." "I deserve to be sick," the auctioneer shouts. And then somebody, and they're sitting just to the diagonal of you in the row in front, raises their hand and says, "1,000,000. Everybody hushes up. Auctioneer says, "Sold. You can have that." One more is going to be auctioned off. And you haven't bought any yet, so maybe this is the one that you'd like to purchase. "Others are better off because I am sick. Who wants to buy that?" And by Jove, there is somebody. She is dressed in a golden fleece. She sits on the front row, and she stands proudly up. And she says, "100,000,000. And the auctioneer says, with great pleasure and glee, "Sold." The lights shut off. All of a sudden, it's dark. It's a little difficult to find your way to the door, but there is a light that tends to shine through the door at the entrance of this auction hall. So you can almost see where you need to go amidst the crowd of people that are scurrying to leave, where you need to go to exit the thought auction hall. But right at the door, as it turns out, you're drawn to a sparkling flip chart. And standing next to this flip chart is this oh-so-gorgeous woman. She's dressed in her natural clothes and seems to be bright by the sunlight. So there is this magical glow to this woman who stands next to this flip chart, which has the word free on the top. And there are four statements on this flip chart. Number one, it says, I can focus on what I want. The second statement says, I can envision it. The third statement says, I can stay on track. The fourth statement says, I have faith. Four thoughts, four positive thoughts. Four positive thoughts that are packed with all the energy that is needed to recover from anything and surely recover from the symptoms of Parkinson's. She looks at you and she says, here they are. They're free. You can take them if you want. I invite you to take those four thoughts for your own. And as you do, and as you take those thoughts in, those four positive thoughts, which of course are the four steps to recovery, this most gorgeous woman who is the mother of the divine earth says to you, by order of the divine universe, you now own these four thoughts forever. Know that they did not cost anything. Make them yours. Have the faith. It is possible to recover. People are feeling better. People are recovering. If you try to model exactly what somebody else does, the chances are it's not going to be exactly what you need. So you have to find your own path. You have to find your own way. At Parkinson's Recovery, we know that there is no panacea. There is no one therapy or treatment or drug or approach that's going to work for everybody. It doesn't exist and it never will exist. There are sets of approaches and therapies that are perfect for each and every person. And how do you find what those are? You find them when you have faith, when you have focus, when you are able to envision what it is that you truly and genuinely want in your life, and when you stay on track. It is, you see, a guaranteed formula of success. There's no way you can fail. Focus, materialize what it is that you want, you stay on track, and perhaps most importantly, you have faith. You have always had faith in the past. Every day you exhibit signs of faith. Use that now to your benefit, and embrace the belief that it is possible. Inculcate that into every tissue and muscle and cell of your body. When you know it is true in your heart, it becomes true. Our thoughts are the most powerful entity in the universe. When we think positive thoughts, positive things happen in our lives. And when we consume negative thoughts that have very low frequencies, very negative things happen in our lives. What's the choice for you? Are you, for some reason, getting off on fear? Is it trippy and in some sense exciting? Are you getting a charge from being afraid? Are you addicted to anxiety? These are issues, clearly, that have deep roots in your unconscious. And if you set your intention, they can be resolved. It's really then a choice to be made about how you want to live your life. Everyone has issues. Everyone has symptoms of one character or another. No one is exempt from that in this life. We all have issues, issues that are emotional, issues that are physical, issues that are spiritual. It's just a reality of living in a body. So what's the choice? Live in fear or live in love? I invite you now to come a bit up to consciousness after our brief meditation to emphasize and honor and enforce the power of positive thoughts. For it is our thoughts that affect our outcomes. Listen to your thinking. And if you find you are wishy-washy, replete with negative naysaying, it's a surefire prediction that you're not going to be feeling well over the next several months. If you find yourself with assertions, carrying the faith of recovery, knowing that it is possible to feel better, having a passion for doing in this life what it is that you know you are here to do, then I can guarantee you your life will be full of joy and exhilaration and excitement and adventure. And yes, you'll be able to work through whatever symptoms you might have. Let me now move to respond to some of the questions that have been asked by individuals who I promised I would answer. Hi, Robert. I read your article about cranial sacral and find much of the description parallels that of Bowen therapy. I have had a bit of cranial sacral work in the past and started Bowen therapy in November. I've had about 8 sessions. John Coleman is a naturopath doctor who had Parkinson's but who is symptom-free today. Highly recommends this form of body work and also speaks of Bowen therapy helping to hydrate the cells. For those of you that are unfamiliar with these terms, cranial sacral is an approach for helping the cranial sacral system come back online, so to speak. There is a spinal fluid that is contained in a closed system from throughout the brain all the way down to our sacrum, all the way down our spinal cord. That fluid literally circulates up and down our body, and it is replenished every 8 hours. Most people don't realize that. It's like you need an oil change every 8 hours. And if the pulsating mechanism in the brain is not what it needs to be, then there's not the pumping necessary, the action that's necessary in order to replenish the fluid in the spinal column. It gets stale, and then the neurons, networks, can't fire the way they need to. So cranial sacral is a very tender touch approach. When people receive the work, they are fully clothed, and the therapist typically barely touches the person. So they are helping all the bones in the head to readjust and helping all of the systems essentially release trauma and stress that happens to be trapped at the cellular level. The therapy of Bowen therapy is similar to cranial sacral therapy in many respects. I've received Bowen therapy myself, and there is a bit of deliberate manipulations with Bowen therapy. There are specific manipulations that are done to help release trauma and stress in the body. They really work well for some people. They're just exactly what they need. And other people are much more benefited from cranial sacral. So it's really an idiosyncratic kind of a thing. Cranial sacral, you know, for the way that I have been trained to do it, and Deborah, is essentially following the body. And so essentially what we do is we see where the stress is trapped, and then we allow and invite the body to unwind. So we're following the body. We're not actually doing specific, we're not doing techniques or therapies to a person when we do that kind of therapy. It's quite a marvelous approach for helping a person release stress and trauma, which are primary contributing reasons why people have the symptoms of Parkinson's. There are cranial sacral therapies that are trained throughout the world, and you can typically find a therapist that's located somewhere close to your particular area. If you're not seeing benefit from Bowen therapy, John Coleman recommends, well, find another Bowen therapist. It could be that the match between you and the therapist is really not quite right. And as you can well imagine, there's a huge variation in the abilities and skills of therapists. Sometimes there is a particular person who's the right person for us. So it may not be a question of Bowen therapy per se. It may really be a question of the individual who's providing the services for you. So you can check around and experiment with perhaps other persons or other therapies. I do know that if stress and trauma are at the top of your list for something you'd like to be able to address, then one of these two therapies really will provide enormous benefit. We've seen huge results in the work that we've done. Now, how do I know cranial sacral therapy actually works? On the Parkinson's Recovery blog, I have a summary of a study that we actually did using cranial sacral therapy. The write-up is entered as June 13th, 2008. We did the study in late 2006, early 2007 in Portland, Oregon, and had 10 volunteers, research volunteers, from a group in Portland who were a support group of individuals with the symptoms of Parkinson's who had elected not to be on prescription medication. And in the write-up that you'll see on the blog, I basically summarized the outcomes of the work that we did for people. And there are a number of videos, before and after videos of individuals. We didn't have permission for about half of the persons to put the videos up. But I can assure you that the videos that we were not able to post were also just as impressive as those that you actually see posted. They're just dramatic different before-after differences. It's dramatic. In some cases, you look at the video and you wonder, is that the same person? And I have to tell you, it is. We only did 6 treatments that lasted only about 20 or 30 minutes. There were 3 of us that were actually working with each of the individual research volunteers. And the difference between the beginning when we started and then 3 months later after the 6 treatments was dramatic. I came out of that with a renewed interest in pursuing Parkinson's as my focus, and so that's actually what inspired me to be able to begin to do the work that I'm doing today. I also came out with the conclusion that cranial sacral work is not the panacea. It's not going to be all that people need, that there's much more involved. So I began to do the intensive research that I've been doing to find many, many other approaches people can pursue to be able to get relief from their symptoms. But I invite anybody, if you're interested in cranial sacral work, if you're looking for ways to relieve stress and trauma, to find out more about both cranial sacral work and Bowen therapy. And on the Parkinson's blog, there is the report of the study that we did in Portland, Oregon, which is full, and we report the evidence from the standard scientific instruments that show that there's improvement. And I want to state once again that the prediction that you find in most of the scientific literature is that there'll be a deterioration of symptoms. Well, here there's an improvement. There's an average improvement. And when you look at the videos, it's really quite dramatic. So the address of the blog where you can actually see the summary of that study is www.blog.parkinsonsrecovery.com. That's the blog for Parkinson's Recovery. And for those of you that are on the webcast, you will see on the page there's a link to the Parkinson's Recovery blog. And if you just click on that, you'll come to the blog. You'll see categories that are listed over to the right. And if you'll click on cranial sacral as a category, you'll see a listing of about 5 or 6 entries that I have on cranial sacral. I think you have to scroll to the very bottom of that. You'll notice where it is because there are a bunch of video screens that pop up. And you can watch the videos and just see what it is that we found in the study that we did. Again, it's not something that if you pursue it, you're going to see you'll become symptom-free quickly. But boy, will you see some relief in symptoms that you've actually begun to experience. Next question comes from Armazad, who is from Tehran. And the question is this. The deep brain stimulation surgery, is it a final cure for Parkinson's disease, or is it simply to stop the symptoms from becoming worse? Deep brain stimulation is clearly not a final cure. It really is designed for a relatively narrow group of individuals. I've had the benefit of listening to explanations and discussions from surgeons who talk about that surgery and the importance of screening patients who are eligible for it. So there's a pretty serious set of screening that they do because it's only going to be helpful to a narrow, relatively small group of individuals. What deep brain surgery does is for individuals on prescription medication who are finding that their on-off times are getting shorter and shorter and shorter, deep brain stimulation surgery is actually designed to lengthen the time of the on and off and be able to then reduce the frequency of medication that has to be taken. It doesn't really help the symptoms be any better. There are clearly a number of side effects that are possible. There are clearly risks to the surgery that can be very serious. The reports of complications from surgeries are pretty significant. But we also know that for people on medications who are finding the frequency that they're having to dose themselves is getting just out of sight and they really want to have a better quality of life. They have reported that it really has made a great difference. So it doesn't really help things get better at all. And there's still we don't have many studies that follow the deep brain stimulation surgery patients over anything other than about 6 months. In the short term, it looks like it for a selected set of symptoms, it does have an immediate result. John Coleman reports some concerns about the longer-term effects of deep brain stimulation surgery. But again, it's relatively recent. It's only been approved in the United States last year as approved surgery for Parkinson's. And so we don't have a lot of people out there who've had deep brain stimulation surgery for years and years to be able to know what the long-term effects are. But again, the specific answer is it is not a final cure, and certainly no surgeon or neurologist would purport it to be so. Does it stop the symptoms from getting worse? It actually does better, especially if a person is on medications. It actually does improve some symptoms, and it doesn't, by the way, touch others. Pretty good for tremors and rigidity for most people, but all the other symptoms, and we know the list is into the hundreds, it doesn't touch those. And in some cases, the most alarming complication seems to be the tendency for suicide. So there have actually been people who've, after they've had the surgery, they've actually committed suicide. So there are positives and negatives, as is the case for any option that you might want to consider for yourself. Second question comes from Saul, and this is, can I get a copy of your latest book, which I'm delighted to get. That's a referral to the Pioneers of Recovery book. And on the teleseminar page, there is an entry there at the top, Pioneers of Recovery, and it's available in downloadable form. So you can actually buy it. And what that means is you can receive a copy immediately on your computer and be able to read it from there. The advantage of the downloadable book is it has all the hot links. So as you're reading it on your computer, you can click and get all kind of additional information. When somebody mentions their website, you'll be able to look at the website and see the information there. So in that sense, it's actually richer in terms of the access to information that you can get. The downside, of course, is you're sitting in front of your computer, which for many people is a huge, huge pain. But the advantage is you can get a lot of additional information simply because it has so many hot links. If you're interested in acquiring the Pioneers of Recovery book, which is a 360-page book, which reports the interviews that I've had with 17 pioneers of recovery, be sure on the order form to enter the word relief, R-E-L-I-E-F, in the coupon code for a 25% discount. So that's basically $10 off. The book then comes in at $29, which is a lot better than the $39. So be sure to put that in if you're interested in purchasing that. This question actually may be not asking about the downloadable book, but the hard copy book. The publisher tells me it'll be out next week. And I'll put a notice out to everybody to that effect. The decision I made was to publish the hard copy book with color. And there are pictures, for those of you that have seen the downloadable book, throughout every page of the Pioneers of Recovery. I really felt like it needed to be illustrated. And all of the pictures are in color. I had a great time preparing it. And the publisher tells me it's quite expensive to publish a book that's 360 pages with you, when you've got color pictures throughout. But I decided to go for it instead of going in black and white. So the actual cost of the hardback book is going to be more than I would have preferred. It's going to be $59.95. I'm not pleased about that, but I am pleased that the actual quality of the book is going to be really outstanding. So I'll give an announcement on the Parkinson's Recovery newsletter, and for those of you that are not signed up, be sure to sign up, because in the newsletter I always give announcements of all the teleseminars. We're doing my teleseminar every week on Thursday at 11 Pacific time, so you can treat that as a standard event. But I have many, many other exciting and I might add quite famous guests that I'll be interviewing here over the next several months. And we have a very well-known woman who does EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, that I'll be interviewing soon. And without announcing all the other special guests, let me assure you that you'll be quite impressed with some of the rich and incredible insights and help that you'll be getting from people through these teleseminars. The teleseminars are always free. There's obviously no charge for those. And you can get announcements of those from the Parkinson's Recovery newsletter. And also, if you just check into the blog, I always enter announcements about those in the blog. Renee asked the question, I just read the attachment about Pioneers of Recovery, and I would like to know if you intend to publish a hardback. Yes, I just mentioned that that's coming out next week. And she says, because I do not trust computers. I don't blame you, Renee. I tell you, computers can be a pain. So, yes, the hardback book is coming out next week. And I also have all the audio recordings that have been mastered, and we'll be putting out an announcement about those here in the next several days. That's a set of 7 CDs and a CD insert you can put in your MP3 player or an MP3 player that's all loaded up. So the company is all set to mail those out to people who like to listen to all the recordings of people that I've interviewed. So there are basically two ways to get the information. You can read it in the book, or you can actually listen to the actual interviews, which gives you a very different experience, I might add, because the people that I've talked with are quite fascinating in every respect. Renee also has a second question. She's from New Mexico. She says, I have not seen the first three steps. And, of course, today we're talking about faith, which is the fourth step. And we also mentioned all four steps in the discussion earlier, as well as the meditation. But she says, how can I become aware of them? Mind you, I was absent from home about 5 weeks, and my PC was not running at its best. But it is okay now. I'm interested because I'm a Parkinson's patient. So, basically, Renee is interested in knowing more about how she can get previous information about the work that I've been doing on the steps to recovery. Well, there are basically two answers. I'm today on the fourth, and next week I'm completing the discussion of the fifth. I have prepared and finished just this weekend a series of five meditations that appear now on the Parkinson's Recovery member website. The first meditation for focus, which is the first step, is up this week. And then each of the subsequent weeks, I'll be presenting the meditations for the subsequent 4 weeks. These are meditations that I recorded and have not actually done on the teleseminars. Renee, if you're interested in knowing all about the steps, and it's helpful, of course, to actually process each of the steps so that you can enforce the importance of each for yourself personally, you can get on to the Parkinson's Recovery member website and see the meditations for the first step, for the focus step. And to do that, you can to get a peek of that site and see whether or not that's going to work for you. You can log on to the Parkinson's Recovery member website page. And the link is, again, on the teleseminar page. And what comes up is a login page, and all you want to enter there is the username Thoughts, T-H-O-U-G-H-T-S, T-H-O-U-G-H-T-S, Thoughts, and the password 1234. That brings you into the site, and what you'll want to do is to be sure and check over to the meditations. There are two pages of meditations. There are the daily meditations, and then there's a week meditation. And what you'll see there is the first week of meditations on focus. And then each day, subsequent day, there's a new meditation. And then each week, I shift to the next step. So you, if you'd like, you'll be able to get all the information in detail on the four steps from the member website. If you want to continue after a week, it costs the grand sum of $1. So you can sign up and you can get all the information on all the other steps there on the member website. Now, the second way to get the full scoop is I'm coming out with a book, The Five Steps to Recover from Parkinson's, and that will summarize everything we've talked about and includes all the meditations, and you'll be able to hear all the meditations as well on audio. So that's another possibility. It'll be another 3 or 4 weeks before that's actually issued. But all of what you've heard on the teleseminars will simply be incorporated into that particular book. So that's a lot of talk about answering questions from people with regard to how they can get additional information about what's up at Parkinson's Recovery. All the teleseminars that I do are accessible to anybody, so you can call in on the phone or you can always check in on the computer. The question and answer deal is available to anybody. I'm most happy to take in questions, and I don't necessarily respond immediately because it takes me a while to answer some of these questions. But give me a few days or even sometimes a few weeks, and I'll pontificate and come back with you with some thoughts about what I think might be helpful. We're all about providing faith to everyone that it is possible to recover from the symptoms of Parkinson's. I'm all about doing extensive research on this topic and identifying individuals who are using therapies and approaches that are helping them, and that's what the Pioneers of Recovery is all about. It's documenting what we have found, and in the Pioneers work, which has taken me about 6 or 8 months of research to actually do, I found individuals who have Parkinson's and who are doing things that are providing great relief to them. And I found other individuals who are healthcare practitioners who are seeing people with Parkinson's and getting great results. And they're talking about their approach and what they do. So you'll get a wide range of ideas of what are possibilities that you might want to consider for yourself. Again, it's not pinpointing any particular or single approach whatsoever, because what you'll discover in Pioneers is everybody is using approaches that are unique to them. What we do discover is experimentation is what makes the huge difference. Taking action is what makes the huge difference. And so the Pioneers are people who have the mindset that, yes, it is possible to be able to get good relief from symptoms and lead a productive, useful, creative life. And so you'll get, I quite frankly was amazed at the suggestions that I heard. I mean, healthcare practitioners talking about things they were doing with their clients that were getting incredible results that I've never seen anywhere. I was amazed at some of what was revealed in these interviews. And with people with the symptoms of Parkinson's, some of what people have tried is quite amazing. It's just, it's incredible. And so you'll hear their stories. You can get, in the Pioneers work, you can get actual links or to websites of the healthcare practitioners or their phone numbers. And I really want to encourage folks who look into the Pioneers of Recovery work. If you see something that calls to you, then I would follow that up by a call to the person who is working with that. I think in all respects, I found people who are open to be discussing with you options that you might be considering. And in many cases, you can find therapists or practitioners that are locally based. But the people I interviewed are very open to being able to be available to answer questions. The contact information for the people who have Parkinson's is available for two of the seven people I interviewed. The other people, I'm sure, as you can well imagine, are not going to provide contact information because these are very private kind of things. And so, but two of the individuals I interviewed did provide contact information. They are symptom-free today. It's one of the two was John Coleman, who had a very advanced stage of Parkinson's in the mid-90s, and he figured out ways to become symptom-free. And he basically tells his story, which is quite amazing in the sense that, no, it's not an easy ride, and yes, you do have doubts, and how in the world do you come over those doubts? John talks about that, and he, I want to say, truly struggled with being able to work his way out of what were some very challenging and desperate symptoms. It's an amazing story. And the second story, the other person that you can also call and talk with is Nathan Ziegum. And Nathan also had a very advanced stage of Parkinson's, and he found his own way of being able to become symptom-free today, and he tells his story. And what's interesting is the stories are very different. What the two people did is there are a few similarities, but basically they're two very different stories. And I am dedicated to documenting here the stories of other people who are symptom-free. And so you'll be seeing here in the future more and more stories of people who are adopting one approach or another to being able to get relief from the symptoms. The work that I've been doing now for the last four teleseminars, I think, is really fundamental, and it's the most important work that you can do of all. There are the five steps, and I don't want anybody out there listening to think that I'm such a hot and shot kind of guy that I've got all these steps organized and I've got them down and I know how to do them. I'm doing the work along with you. And of the first four steps, I want everybody to know that the step that I am struggling with and working to overcome is the first step. It's the step of focus. I have a desperate problem with that, and I struggle with the meditation that I set up for you in the very beginning. I'm working every day to focus my efforts. I don't know how to describe it, but my whole life I've bounced from one topic to the next, and I don't want to do that anymore. I want to stay focused. Now, I am focused on Parkinson's recovery, and I've done a good job with that, but with regard to focus on specific projects, I continue to all of a sudden get a flare of energy to do something, and I do it. So just for an example, I'm now publishing the Five Steps to Recovery because I think they're so essential and important. But I've got a whole edited book that is just lying there to the side waiting to be organized and indexed that I just haven't gotten to. I don't know how to describe it. I'm just unfocused. So I invite you to identify of the four steps that we've talked about, any one that still needs a bit support or bolstering up, and I promise that I'll work on my focus issues and invite you to work on whichever one of the four steps is a challenge to you. So for you, is focus a challenge on deciding one single wish or want that you would like to accomplish in your life, or is being able to materialize that wish, in other words, see it, feel it, know it, hear it, being able to detail out exactly what it looks like and feels like. Is that a challenge for you? Is staying on track, is basically only doing that and nothing else? And, of course, that's tied to my issue of focus as well. And then finally, is faith an issue? Do you find that you are continually doubting that recovery is possible? If faith is an issue, then that's a meditation that would be very beneficial to you to pursue. The great exciting announcement that I've got for everyone is the most exciting step of all, step number 5, is going to be the focus of the teleseminar next Thursday at the same time, 11 o'clock Pacific time. That's United States time. I'll be talking about the 5th step. And without divulging the secret of what it is, this is one step that I do really well. So I'm well qualified to be able to talk about this final and capstone step. As you all know, all 5 steps are keyed and linked to thoughts, our thinking. And the big umbrella idea is when we carry negative thoughts in our mind, negative thoughts like I can't do it, everybody knows that I'm going to get worse, recovery's not possible, criticisms of anybody who's hopeful, those are negative thought forms. We all have negative thought forms, but the reality is that one can lead to another, can lead to a barrage of negative thought forms that then impede any promise of being able to see recovery. So the key, as far as I'm concerned, is to acknowledge when negative thought forms surface. We have them every day, everybody does, and simply say, oh, there it is again, I'm not going to do that right now. And you'll notice that when you lock into the positive thought forms, it'll make a huge, huge difference to your enthusiasm over taking action, calling people to find out what options are available to you for being able to get some great relief from symptoms. I am always available. You can always ask questions at the following email address, Robert, R-O-B-E-R-T, at parkinsonsrecovery.com. My phone numbers are scattered all over the place, over all the websites. I'm delighted to respond to those of you who have specific questions that are concerning to you. Please feel free to write in questions on the teleseminar page for next week of anything that you'd like for me to answer. And as I did today, I'll be sure and respond to those and answer those questions that I get at the teleseminar. Again, this is a every Thursday activity at 11 o'clock Pacific time, where we're now going to segue over to next week to the 5th step of recovery, and combining all 5 steps together is going to transform your life. I promise you. It's not just a question of thinking about it, it's a question of experiencing it. So I want to invite you to go back, ask which of the steps is a challenge, and begin to work more directly to strengthening a step that may still be weak for you. Just as I promise I'm strengthening the step of focus that is a challenge for me. And that is what is happening at Parkinson's Recovery on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the men are handsome, all the women are smart, and all the children are loved. Know that by virtue of the fact you're listening to this discussion, you are on the road to recovery. Good day.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end. Welcome to the conferencing service. Please enter your conference ID followed by the pound sign. Thank you. Please hold while we validate.